Welcome to another episode of the Left Curve podcast. The Left Curve is an attempt from Radarblock to make crypto and Web3 knowledge possessed by industry experts and thought leaders accessible to masses in simple terms, minus the jargon. In crypto world, you know, Chung, it is easy to get lost in confusing information. You know, some of the sources have too much information, others have very little. And Chung here, who is our guest today, has been pretty active in the VC investing space, helping out early projects. You also talk to multiple new projects a day and hear about their struggles and challenges. That's when we thought, you know, we should invite you here, since a lot of founders attempt to raise capital for their protocols. Few succeed and fewer still achieve an impressive cap table. And I think there's a lot of insights that you can share, which may help the founders. Now, before we start, of course, let me preface that none of what we say is financial advice. We're just crypto enthusiasts. Please do your own research before making any investments. And allow me to explain how the podcast is going to flow. We're going to break this down into two separate phases. We will be discussing VC founder fit briefly in the first phase and then go deeper into the second one as well. So Chung, how about we start with an introduction from yourself?
Yeah, definitely. Thanks a lot for the invitation, Adam. Chung, investment partner at Axstream Capital. I joined crypto space after I've completed my MBA in Nigeria. My roommate, he was in Nigeria, and he was trading a lot of crypto, doing a bit of money laundering. I wanted to make money, so I kind of learned from him, but I lost all my money, and then kind of get to learn more about crypto and think this is super interesting. And then I joined Axstream Capital 3 years ago. I joined as the business, like BD manager, and right now I'm the only employee or staff that joined as an employee and ended up as a partner. So it's been pretty good. I think the VC world right now is having a tough time, but it's not gonna last, and hopefully times are gonna come. And our fund is mainly started by folks from MIT, Stanford, etc. All have management consulting background. We are the third investor into Aave back in the days. So I think we did 4,000x at the highest point. We exited at 20x, and then later on we did play all the DeFi apps like Yearn, Alpaca, etc. So also started Uniswap China community, so one of the largest communities DeFi in China. Right now we are running our second fund. It's been pretty well. We've done Say, we've done Mentor, we've done Isle.net, etc. All got listed on Binance, and so been a good ride, and I think hopefully we are gonna make it big also for this cycle.
Very, very interesting, Chung. And you know, I heard a lot of mentions of multiple triple digit exits right there. So of course, before we come to today, let's start from the very beginning, I must say. Let's go back a couple of years when you had started joining Arkstream, or when you started entering into the VC space. What was the landscape like of VC investing across crypto when you first started out? What do you think were the popular sectors at that point of time?
So when I first started, so I know nothing about crypto, but it was very different from what is happening right now. So back in the days, I think DeFi was very hyped. So when I joined, we were chatting with lots of DeFi protocols, and then later on starting the MusicFi, GameFi, all the X5, X2N, etc. So for instance, I think when I joined at that time, people are always investing very quick. We talk to a project and then we decide every 2 days, 1 to 2 days. And right now it's very different. We talk to projects, maybe we give, we go through IC investment committee and we make decision within 1 to 2 weeks. So back then when I joined, that was the kind of the bull cycle. Every day we talk to maybe 3 to 4 projects, and then same days, sometimes we just send the money, we just decide. So that was super crazy, and we work a lot over time. And I think when MusicFi, GameFi, or X2N came, it was also very hyped. So we were playing all the games. I remember StepN. StepN was coming, and then we downloaded the app, which is an NFT of issues, and then we're trying to use that, trying to learn about how to get more points, get more airdrops, then invest quite a bit just to play around. And yeah, that was quite a crazy time. And I think back in the days, lots of wealth creation. So every time we heard some other VCs they get in some deals and then they instantly, or maybe within a month or a few weeks, they make a good multiples, more like 10x, 58x. But right now, I think the cycle we are, a lot of us, even with deals that get listed on Binance, is lower than 10x. And also back in the days, I think lots of individual funds, because with that wealth creation, any individual, they can start a fund. And so the entry barrier is very low. And right now, I think to start a VCs or do investment, you need to be a lot more serious and the barrier is a lot higher. But I would say MusicFi, DeFi, GameFi, X2N, they are not hyped anymore. So it also shows how short a kind of cycle is from time to time. And I think when I was just starting, it's a lot to learn. You have new stuff, new ideas every single day. And I really miss that time. Right now, I wouldn't say that there is nothing new, but obviously getting a lot slower. And at least for me, I'm not seeing a lot of very, very new narrative right now.
Yeah, very interesting. Yeah, because this is something that, you know, even I was chatting about with Lingo the other day, that it seems like most projects nowadays, instead of coming up with something new, it's just like a combination of two or three different protocols and, you know, match together. not necessarily the novelty that the 2021 bull cycle had. You had new projects popping up with new sectors, new projects starting entirely new sectors as well. That seems to be a bit lacking right now, but maybe that's just my nostalgia playing the game altogether. But, you know, for somebody who has started like a project and is now considering, you know, VC investments or whether they should go the failed sale route, can you walk us through like what would be the advantages of, you know, going with like a pure community-based sale versus, you know, siding with the VCs? You know, can you like help them make a decision as to like, okay, what, this is my position. Should I go with VC rounds? Should I raise or should I not raise and rely on community?
Yeah, definitely. And also coming back to your previous point, I think DeFi, like Aave, etc., they were very innovative. And then this cycle, I think there will be something very innovative coming up. It's just that we haven't seen them. And probably when the price goes up, we will be seeing some innovations and we're just waiting for that for now. And like, I think for projects that are looking to go through the VC route or community route, it really depends. Because for VCs, I think for this cycle, a lot of VCs that can stay, that can survive, they are more of the high quality VCs. And previously, there are a lot of bad VCs that have, because the entry barrier is very low. And like right now, I'm seeing, for instance, I can give some examples. Some projects, they came from the UK to China just to see us. Some projects, after they've spoken with us, they asked us for advisory to be their advisors, because as VCs, we have some experience. We see some new narratives, and so we can kind of guide the projects what kind of narrative you can do. Previously, there was a project, they were working on an old narrative, so we spent maybe 4 to 5 weeks having weekly calls with them, and then at the end, we kind of helped or assisted them to change their narrative. So for VCs, we see projects, a lot of them, every single week. So I think that is the advantage. We know where the market is going, what are the popular narrative, and then I think VCs can definitely help on that. And also VCs, they've got connections with other VCs and other growth firms, for instance, Radarblock. So that is the support VCs can give when you're thinking about, or when projects are thinking about whether it goes through the VC route. But right now, I'm also seeing a lot of fair launch token. They don't have VCs and a lot of memes. I think with Bonk, Boom, they are all memes. So if you are building in memes or projects building in memes, maybe VCs can't help that much. But for projects that are doing infrastructure, deep tech, I think VCs definitely have their value add. And also, maybe Casper or Tao, they started without VCs, but at the end of the day, they still grow back and have some VCs. And I'll say right now, having VC support is quite important, especially in terms of how you change the narrative. And if you are seeing all the top projects looking at coin market cap, the top 100, I think maybe 90%, they are kind of also supported by VCs.
Yes. Very interesting points overall. And definitely, I agree with you there that VCs definitely bring their circle, the network. That is basically the edge that most VCs offer. Plus the guidance in terms of narratives as well, because we often say that you can have the best product, but if it's not the narrative's time, then you're not going to capture any of the money inflow, right? Because people are going to bet on sectors and sector leaders, actually. So even if you look at AI or DeepIn, for example, people are usually going to, you know, OpenCoin Gecko or DeFi Llama, look at the top two, top three, and that's where most of the attention is going to be. It's going to be quite reflexive, almost a cycle that feeds itself. The top project becomes a top project because it has a lot of attention, and because it is the top project, it gets a lot of attention. So it's like a never-ending loop altogether. But, you know, this is from like a project's build, POV. What if from like an investor's POV? You mentioned that you, of course, have like a lot of projects that come to your table, and, you know, you have to evaluate whether or not they're like a good fit, whether they're a good investment opportunity as well. Can you tell us a little bit about, you know, what are the main differences between the way, you know, retail crowd makes their investment versus how VC funds make their investment decisions as well?
Yeah, absolutely. And also, I think you mentioned about the importance of the narrative. I think this is really important because back in the days, a lot of VCs are investing in the GameFi hype. And right now, if you're still building a game, it doesn't work anymore, no matter how good you are. And we see some team, they were building some privacy protocols, which didn't work. And then once they pivoted, they have a new branding, they got a new name, and then they've got a new narrative, but they're basically building still the same thing. And they are just changing the narrative, and then they got a lot of hype. I think this is super important in terms of how you sell the story. And a lot of people from the Web2 space, they think, I need to build something first and then tell the world what I'm building. But the Web3 space, they work very differently. I mean, Web3, I think we need to tell a very grand narrative. We don't need to have anything. But on Web3, we've got tokens, we've got stories, and people will buy in to your story. I think this is a major difference people do not get, and oftentimes a lot of Web2 founders do not get. But coming, I'm sorry for the long explanation, but coming back to your point, I think VCs and retail think very similar, probably, because Web3 space is still very new, right? A lot of VCs, they just started from grassroots. Like for us, we were started by three GPs who came from very grassroots background, and most of the other VCs, they are. And then because of the wealth creation effect, which happens the last cycle, so VCs are basically just some very smart retail, and then they started from nothing. And I think maybe after 10 years or after some more cycles, VCs will be a lot more professional. Still, I think they are still, but I would say VCs and retail, they think very similarly. But the major difference is maybe some of the retail, they depends on the KOLs or the geography. For instance, if you're based in Korea or Vietnam, it's very KOL driven. So a lot of retail, they make decisions based on what the KOL says, and VCs are not. And VCs, we usually like see the team, see the backer, see the narrative. Retail, they see a lot of backer. They see if Binance, in fact, they think they might get this on Binance. VCs, we might have more insider information, but basically the decision-making process are the same. And a lot of times, even I think some of the very strong retail, they make a lot more money than VCs on the liquid side. And, you know, the best liquid trading fund, they are usually staying anonymous. So people don't know where they are. People don't know their name because they make enough money. If you are doing liquid fund, if you are a liquid fund and you have a name, it's usually for the purpose of fundraising. I'm not saying all of them are, but I know the one who makes the most money or a lot of money, they are usually staying anonymous in the liquid space. And for VCs, so if we are investing in some liquid, I think there aren't a lot of differences apart from maybe retail. They are more KOL driven. Maybe they look even more into the backers. Maybe for us, we know more about the insider information. And also, I think for VCs, another difference is sometimes we deploy because we need the branding. It's not because we want to make money. It's for strategic reasons. Sometimes we invest in a project. We know we are not going to make huge multiples or maybe we lose money, but we invest because we know once we invest in that deal, we get some connections, etc. So some of the deals, if you see some VCs investing and you don't know why, probably there is a reason. And there was one example. I think there was a very hype protocol that got huge VC funding. And we, even as VC ourselves, we don't know why that other VC invested on three rounds, lead all the rounds. And then later on, we figure out it's because some of the VC's LP are from that project. So they just invest for strategic reasons. So I think among VCs, there is this also extra consideration.
That was a super insightful answer, man, especially about, you know, the retail crowd being KOL driven, while the VCs, even though they don't have like the magic pill for making the right decisions, they just take into account more decision parameters, such as, you know, background of the team. They perhaps spend a little bit more time. They ask, you know, other VCs as well about what they think about like a particular project. And, you know, you also mentioning that sometimes VCs will just make investments for like very strategic reasons, right? Not necessarily for like a multiple that they're chasing, but more so for branding purposes. So that is also key. So the next time, you know, maybe if our audience sees, you know, a protocol having like a lot of backers or a lot of people on the cap table, there can be strategic alliances between members of the cap table and even like, you know, the main project itself. But if someone has a protocol that they're starting out with today, let's just say someone from our audience, you know, decides to, hey, I want to launch a protocol. I would love to have ArcStream on my cap table as well. What are like some of the key metrics they should focus on developing before they, you know, before they approach ArcStream or before they even think about raising like a VC round? Because as you mentioned, a lot of Web2 folks enter into the industry. They think that, okay, product is all I need to focus on. But actually, the truth of the matter is that the story is all you need to focus on. The product really builds itself on the back burner. And that the token in itself is a story of its own, right? So what would you say to that?
Yeah, definitely. And also, coming back to your previous point, I think a lot of VCs, they just ask other VCs for opinions. And even a lot of VCs, they are not that magic. People always think about that. Many don't understand AI, at least I don't. And I'm not that smart. If I'm smart, I would be a founder. That's why we invest in founders, because they're smarter than us. And a lot of times, VCs, they just ask who are the backers of that round and then decided whether to invest or not. So many of them, they are also sheep capital. But I think things might change in the future, but it's very tough, especially given many of the VCs, they don't have huge capital. So if they invest, they are very scared. Maybe they invest in one deal, they lead the round or they become a big investors, but no other big ones are on board, and then the projects cannot make the narrative. And I think in this crypto space, there are only few VCs that has the ability or the leverage to make a new narrative, and other VCs are always following what they're making of that narrative. But coming back to your point, if someone is starting a project, and I think as we've mentioned, narrative is the most important thing. You need to think about what is the real innovations. Innovations not in terms of small innovations. If you're building a better DAX, etc., that wouldn't be a very sexy stuff. So I think one needs to look top down. What is the top narrative right now? Maybe right now it's AI. It might change. Maybe some Solana restaking. Restaking was very hyped, right? I think a few months ago. But once Renzo and EtherFi got launched, the FTV wasn't that good. I think right now maybe 1 billion, etc., or even less than that. So the ceiling got a lot lower. So if you are still building restaking now, versus 3 months or 4 months ago, basically is a half that space. Maybe I'm wrong, but I think it's kind of that. So you need to think about what is very popular right now, and then think about in that narrative, what kind of new radical things you can build. And even though some of the founders, they are not building anything related to the narrative, but there are still a lot of ways you can pivot, or you can make your product very relevant to that narrative. You're still building the same thing, but you just change the narrative. I think this is the first thing people always look at, exciting narrative. Because in Web3, you don't need to build something. You just need to tell something, and after some time, you build it. So this is the one thing. And then I think very important to know where the narrative is. And I know a lot of projects that they have pivoted, and they did really well because they shifted the narrative. And I think in terms of metrics, if we talk about metrics, you just need to benchmark yourself with what is the best one. Previously, when we were looking at games, we are benchmarking maybe Fusionist. And right now, I think for a lot of Torn, people are building a lot of things on Torn. You just need to benchmark yourself with maybe Catisson, maybe Notcoin, because you need to think about users, because when your protocol get listed, a lot of times when centralized exchanges, they are listing you, they want you to bring in new users. That's why maybe Binance is listing so many Torn related tokens, because they can bring in new users to the exchange. And I think when Notcoin launched, and then later on Torn, and then later on something else, Binance is launching that multiple times, which means they have found it working for the exchange to bring in new users. So you need to think about how can you get your metrics to bring in new users, what kind of benchmark you have. So you need to think in terms of what centralized exchanges think. I think this is very important stuff. And even a lot of projects, they are using fake metrics, but still, if people like that, you need to do that narrative. I think these are the 2 points. And then the third most important point is to get the team. If you have a very strong team with a Web3 native previously successful, like someone who has built something very successful before in the Web3 space, I think that you can easily get funding. It's more about the team. You see Sentient, you see a lot of them. Basically, they have 800 million valuation first round before having a DAC. They have no DAC for a few months. And I see a lot of other projects having the same thing. And if you can get someone that good in a team, I think it could really work out really well for you. But if you don't have, if you just need to work on your narrative and work on your metrics. And metrics is easy to get, but you just need to think more about what kind of customer you need, what kind of geography you need, and who do you benchmark yourself with, and how can you let exchange know you have the good users for them to grow their exchange. Because I talk to exchange a lot of times, the CEOs or the senior executives, when they list a token, they're really thinking about how can this token benefit me as an exchange? How can you bring in more users to me? I think this is what they think about. So you need to think about what they think about.
This is super golden advice, because I think what most people get wrong is that they focus so much about vanity metrics to the point that they stop thinking about what will a centralized exchange listing would require, or what would a VC require, right? They bloat their valuation so much that they forget that, you know, VCs need to enter at a lower valuation, for example, or they forget that, you know, centralized exchanges can only list you if you have like a growing community. This is a problem I see time and time being repeated, and I have to like walk founders through this idea as well, that, you know, you're building a product that's really great, you still need to have a community. Because see, VCs or listing companies or, you know, any of these centralized exchanges, they're not dumb people. They view like 5 projects a day, if not more. So if you think you're going to bot your Discord, or if you think you're going to bot your Twitter, and they will not be able to figure out real engagement versus fake engagement, I think that's just being too optimistic to the point of delusion. So the whole idea of, oh, I need 100,000 community members by the end of this month, that does not work. Most people look at like projects like Berachain and Monad, And I think they do like a really good job of, you know, formulating a community in some sense. So can you also like explain like how, when you're looking at projects, how much are you looking at the narrative versus how much are you looking at the community versus how much are you looking at the product? If you can just give me like, you know, importance hierarchy, like is it more important to pick the right narrative, or should the founder first focus on getting community through whatever narrative and then pivoting away to the narrative they want to build on? Should they focus on product first? Which one in your head would come first?
Narrative always comes first, because when VCs look in the projects, not just us, I know other VCs, for instance, if right now AI is hype, anything not AI, we kind of give a pass. At first, it might be a bit cruel, but think about, for us, we receive 150 decks a day, not a day, a week. So we can only have the capacity to speak with maybe 10 to 20 projects. And so if you're not in the right narrative, it's a definite pass. Not definite, but if you're not in the narrative, it's kind of a pass, very easy pass, because we don't have enough time. And then unless you have a very strong team, so narrative is maybe 50 or 40%. And then other than that, product, I wouldn't say a lot of VCs care, because you can always change. And a lot of projects, they don't have a product for a long time when we invest. I think Etherfi, at first they were doing RST and then they pivoted. Even Michelle, I think previously when X2Earn was very hype, they were doing ATP, which is kind of dance to earn, and then X2Earn died, and then they shifted to Michelle. Michelle pivoted a lot of times and right now become what it is. And projects can just pivot, and so product isn't the most important thing. And even I know some projects that got listed on Binance, they just hire outsource the work for the product to someone else, and it can still work, because the most important thing is to tell a story that people or the world believe in. Life is too bitter, so we need someone to give us hope. I think hope is most important thing. So narrative is super important. Product, we wouldn't say that's very important, but metrics is definitely something that I think everybody cares about a lot. And having good quality metrics in terms of interactions, in terms of social, whatever, in terms of the distribution of your customers' geography is very important, because there is a consensus on what kind of projects is top tier among the VC space. And basically, if you can build a good metrics, etc., people will know. And real metrics, if you just buy stuff and people know you're not, and people can talk, like VCs talk a lot, and so we know maybe some projects they cheated on one VCs or they scam one, and we kind of all knows about that. And it's just that people talk, so narrative is most important, and having very good metrics, quality metrics, is also important. I think that's where RazorBlock can also come in to help projects to get a decent metrics.
Definitely. You know, as you mentioned, we definitely try our best to help out projects. It's just that, you know, next time somebody comes up to me and, you know, underestimates the importance of narrative, I'm glad I'll always have this podcast to send to them to kind of, you know, prove my point and say, see, it's not only the marketing side of things that are saying this. It's also the VC guys who are also saying that, you know, focus on the narrative. That's very, very important. Now, straying away from the founder's shoes for a moment, let's just say, you know, somebody's watching this and, you know, they're really fascinated by you and the life of like a VC analyst. So how does one begin their journey to become like a VC analyst? Like, what is the usual path to somebody who wants to be on the investment side of things? What are the skills they require? How do they get started?
I think what 3V is easiest, entry. Not lying. Because if you are founder, you need to be smarter than VCs. VCs won't invest in people who are dumber than you. And then also, there is no real entry barrier. I think even last cycle was even a lot easier. Last cycle, the barrier was very low. Right now, it's a bit higher. But if you think about that, many VCs Maybe from my understanding, maybe the some of the VCs, of course, they know a lot, but a lot of VCs, they are not that smart. And if you think about in traditional VCs, when one needs to invest in AI, they need to study a lot. They need to be maybe PhD or master's in AI. But right now, VCs in Web3, they invest in all the things, right? Sometimes when AI is hype, we look into AI. When game is hype, we look into games. And in Web2, they have one person specifically looking into one sub-sector. But in Web3, you can't because each sector changes a lot. And this month, maybe it's game. Next month, maybe Solana is staking, etc. So there is no real entry barrier. You just need to learn very fast off the basics. And all the Web2 VCs, Web3 VCs, it's very decentralized. So if one project is raising 30 VCs got in or 10, Web2 is maybe 1 to 2. They always hide the information from the others. But Web3 is not. So if you're a person that is legit, that you like to help people, you are kind, you will make friends with others and they exchange information as long as you don't scam the other VCs or give them fake information. You build a relationship, you have your own moat or barrier, then you can get started. I wouldn't say there is any real barrier. And we took on some analysts before. It's just that we met them at a conference. Sometimes we give a talk. One time, GPS gave a talk at MIT, a lecture. Someone just came and said, I'm gonna work under you, under our learn from you or collaborate with us. And then we took on analysts and with another program. A lot of times then they have the same program. I think they with some people, but this like I want in HSBC or Goldman Sachs go to the this, but here you find the VC's Telegram handle, someone who works there, is backed and need to Vitalik on Telegram. So, I think it's going to help people. And if you're a legit and kind person who do not take advantage from the others, it's quite easy. You just need to get some of the VCs contact each other, then get a call, figure a meeting, and then it's very easy. I know some VCs investors, they do the same, and I think I read an article before he did the same, but he just basically talked to maybe 200 people, and then he landed a job, and it's just a numbers game. And the good thing is here you can reach out to anybody you want as long as you have the contact, and it's a very flat structure. You don't have any real barrier. But I think the thing is, once you get into the industry, you need to learn very fast. I was sleeping in the office previously when I first got started a lot of times, and right now, of course, it became easy. When I speak with a project, I still take an hour to prepare for a 30-minute call. Previously, it took me a lot longer, but still, you just need to learn. You just need to try to be helpful and trying to add more value. But honestly, I don't think there is a real entry barrier for VCs. And even right now, I'm replaceable, and one here is very replaceable in the VC space.
It's a very humbling answer, to be very honest, Chang, because, you know, to prepare for, like, I hope our audience can understand that what Chang just said is that he spends double the time in preparation than what the actual call is about. So if the call is like 1 hour, he probably is going to spend like 2 hours just simply researching. And when he started out, this is after like a lot of experience, right? He first started out, he probably took like even days to prepare for like each specific call, because each call was that important and you really have to make it work. I think one of the downsides of having access to everyone is that in the beginning, when you're not ready, you kind of already outreach to people a little bit prematurely when you're not really ready for their guidance. So you don't necessarily have the skill or have the work ethic, which is more important, to even keep up
Imagine if like somebody becomes a VC, but they don't have that kind of work ethic, right? I mean, if you tell someone that, you know, you were sleeping in an office, most Web3 folks would be like, oh my God, that's so bad. That shouldn't have happened. But the truth is that, you know, spending those nights in the office perhaps made you who you are. You know, you are the one, and you know, the whole story exists. You exist today because you put in the work at an early stage.
Yes, yes, absolutely. I think that's true. And but as times go by, you learn more skills, and it's very fun, I think, the Web3 space, and you get to meet people that you usually wouldn't be able to meet. And I think people in Web3 space, they are very fun and hardworking people. And it's just that Web3 is a space that you are very close to money. So you can make money very easily, and there are lots of temptations. And I think this is something that one needs to be very careful about. And sometimes I also got tempted, but not always. I think this is a space, and when people get tempted, they can make very wrong decisions. It's kind of I think work ethics is a lot more important than doing anything else. We've got projects that were not that good in the work ethics, but at least personally, we like to work with some founders or VCs that are very legit and have good work ethics. And you can tell when you speak with someone or when you transact with someone, then you can tell whether they really care about others or they just want to take the entire pie.
Very true, Changwin. You know, it's been a pleasure talking to you. I think I'll ask you the last question, which I always ask to everyone who's on the podcast. Who is one Web3 personality that, you know, you would like for us to bring to this podcast as well?
I've got a few, but I think, of course, I would love to bring some of our projects on. And I think one of the projects we invested in, Linera, they could be very good because Sui is very hyped right now. And Sui, Apples, they were from the same Libra team. So Libra team, they came out of three teams in the crypto space. One is Aptos, another is Sui, the third one is Linera. I think Linera is going to be, when they launch, it's going to be a huge one. Then it's very under the radar. And I think Matthew, the founder, he would be able to share more insights if he comes on the podcast, and then people can learn about what they're building. And I think once they launch, it will be a new major L1s in the space as well.
Thank you so much for sharing your insights with us, Changwin. And yes, we'd love to chat with Matthew as well. To our audience, if you love the show, please do give us a follow at RadarBlog. My personal account is at 0x0. Please make sure you also follow our guest, Chung, at ChungTheOga. So that is all for this one. We'll see you in another episode. Thank you so much for your time, Chung.